As Larry announced, I'll be talking about the church. We've been talking about a particular facet of our understanding of the church, or at least the insights that I have gained. And in certain areas where there needs to be a certain amount of judgment that needs to be used, and I think certainly those points can sometimes be debatable. But what we're trying to understand to the best of our ability is the relationships that we have with one another. And then, of course, what happens when those relationships break down? When a person is baptized into Christ, again, as I have stated, a person is not baptized into the Rosedale Church. That person is not baptized into something called the denominational Church of Christ. A person is baptized into Christ, and that's all there is to it. A person is added to Christ's body by the very fact that that person has been obedient to the gospel. After a person becomes a Christian, if we understand what happened in New Testament times, people became associated with one another. We call that fellowship. We call that being connected. We call that sharing. And so as we come together in our relationships, relationships oftentimes become strained. Sometimes they're going along great, but then generally when different personalities are involved, a lot of times there'll be difficulties, and it'll be hard for us to maintain this relationship, this sharing. And so what do we do in situations like that, and what relationships do we maintain? But when people become members of a local church, that's their choice. A person voluntarily seeks to have a relationship with a local church. Paul voluntarily, after he was baptized, on the road to Damascus, or later on after that event, he wanted to be associated with the church in Jerusalem. He didn't have to, but he wanted to be. And he went down there, and they were a bit afraid to entertain his being a member. And so Barnabas comes along and supports him in the fact that I'm not what I was before. I'm somebody different here. I'm not the guy who was out killing Christians. I'm now one of you, and I want to be a part of you. But that was the decision that he made. And then, of course, that congregation, based on the evidence, they had the right to make a decision as to whether they felt safe with Paul being in the local church. Apollos was another one who was out teaching, and he'd been teaching the baptism of John. And he learned that there was something else other than the baptism of John, that the baptism of John was leading up to the coming of Christ, and Christ had come, and it's time to start teaching baptism into Christ for the remission of sins. After he was taught on that, he wanted to go preach and teach to other places, so somebody gave him a letter for him to take along with him so people would know, so they, if he wants to voluntarily associate with them, they would receive him, or at least would be more open to the idea of receiving him. So when we talked a couple of weeks ago about what happens, though, when we must separate ourselves from someone, there are situations, there are a number of situations which arose in New Testament times, and we'll review briefly these, to let us know that there are some times when the local congregation says, you know, that particular kind of behavior is not acceptable. Now, realize that generally when that is made, there is usually some sort of an opposing argument that is presented, or someone feels like they've been treated wrongly or something like that. It always seems to happen that way. But even though that may be true, that doesn't mean that we don't have the responsibility to recognize that someone is being disruptive to the group, but yet still wants to be associated with the group. There was that guy in 1 Corinthians 5. Paul had said, I've decided to deliver such a one to Satan for the destruction of his flesh so that his spirit may be saved in the day of the Lord Jesus. Now, kind of a flowery way of saying that this guy needs to know that he's really not behaving like he's in the body of Christ. He's making more like he is a part of Satan's family. And so he needs to know that. He needs to understand that. So he goes on to tell the people in Corinth, you've got to put this guy out of the church. Now again, you know, in a world where being, quote, judgmental is, you know, one of the greatest sins that anyone could commit in the mind of our culture, making such a judgment, people would look at this and say, well, what right do you have to tell this guy it's wrong for him to have his father's wife? I mean, after all, they are attracted to one another. Isn't that enough? Are you going to tell someone that, you know, they can't love another person? We understand how that goes. He says, for what have I to do with judging outsiders, Paul says, talking about people who are in the world. Do you not judge those who are within the church? But those who are outside, God judges. Remove the wicked man from among yourselves. You guys don't have a responsibility, technically speaking, toward those people who are out in the world. But that person who's in your fellowship, he says that that person's become leaven. You know, the little leaven that leavens the whole lump. He's being a bad influence. You have to tell him that that behavior is not acceptable. Now, again, this is not an easy thing to do. And I suppose there are many churches who would avoid doing this because it is difficult to do and because a lot of times there are hard feelings. But I think the precedent is established. In 2 Thessalonians 3, there were some people in the church there. Paul says, if anyone does not obey our instruction in this letter, take special note of that person and do not associate with him so that he will be put to shame. Yet do not regard him as an enemy, but admonish him as a brother. And in this particular case, there were some people who weren't working in this church, and they were being busybodies, they were idle, and they were going about disrupting the church. And Paul says, that cannot be accepted. He says, you need to be aware, this person needs to know that he's not doing what's right, or she's not doing what's right. And so he says, don't regard him as an enemy. So one of the things that probably, by inference here, at this particular point, is to understand that even when we separate ourselves from someone, it doesn't mean that all relationships are completely cut off, because he says, don't regard him as an enemy, admonish him as a brother. I'm assuming that if you're going to be in the presence of this individual, you have to be physically in the presence of that individual to admonish that individual. So I don't think it means that relationships are completely cut off, but I do think that we all must understand that when a person is living outside of what the fellowship recognizes as being a true and good behavior, that you certainly don't, even in the relationship you may have with that person, whatever it may be, you're admonishing them, but we shouldn't be encouraging them to just live like they're living. And that takes some good judgment on the part of all of us to decide whether we're doing that or not. But if we do have this responsibility to admonish him as a brother, it seems to me that we're going to be some way connected to that individual, even after we say, no, you don't fit here in the group. You don't want to do what we want to do or what we believe the Bible teaches. There's this factious man Paul was talking about to Titus. He says, reject a factious man after the first and second warning, knowing that such a man is perverted and is sinning, being self-condemned. Now, it doesn't say separate yourself from him, but it does say, you know, this person needs to know that his behavior is not acceptable. Different ideas come along. Paul told Timothy, keeping faith and a good conscience, which some have rejected and suffered shipwreck in regard to their faith. Among these are Hymenaeus and Alexander, whom I have handed over to Satan so that they will be taught not to blaspheme. Now again, understanding that sometimes these situations can be difficult, we still recognize that even though this is a difficult thing to do, we are still responsible to do it. And I also realize, as being an elder in the local congregation here, that there is a certain amount of judgment that's involved in how we go about moving through that particular decision that we're going to make. We talked about the idea that, even God allowed people to behave in a certain way for a while before he actually passed judgment on them. He never just says, okay, you've done one wrong thing, that's the end of it, you're out. So I understand then that there's going to be a certain amount of time that's going to be allotted for hopefully the person to change. And, you know, when that time is up, I'm not sure that any of us know for certain. We just do the best that we possibly can in determining what's the best action. Well, as you'll notice there in the point that follows, we talk about elders as having some sort of a role in this. And it's important for us to understand at least elders here in this situation, mostly as it relates to understanding whom we have responsibilities over regarding who's in and who's out, or do we withdraw fellowship, or do we receive someone into the fellowship. And that is understanding that our responsibility as elders here is only within the boundaries of this fellowship. We don't have any authority or any special ability toward anyone else anywhere. It's only in this congregation. There's also no headquarters where it's established, where if we do have to withdraw from someone, that we send a letter off to some church or some office in a big town somewhere saying, okay, we just want you to know that these guys are out of our denomination. We don't do that because we're not connected in any other way, in any way to other congregations. We may be connected as individuals, but my responsibility, our responsibility, is to recognize that we are responsible for this local congregation, and that's all. And might I say, people who are in this congregation, and that's all. In 1 Peter chapter 5, Peter tells some elders, and we learn from this, he says, therefore I exhort the elders among you as your fellow elder and witness of the sufferings of Christ, and a partaker also of the glory that is to be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God among you. So I don't have any responsibilities in Fresno. I have no responsibilities in Los Angeles. I'm not an advisor to any other congregation anywhere, any more than any one of the other elders are in this congregation. We are to shepherd the flock of God, which is here, among us. And we have no greater responsibility than that. He says, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily, according to the will of God. Then Paul was giving some instructions to the Ephesians elders. Now, who's he talking about here? And what is he telling them? And what kind of information is he giving them? Well, most of us who are familiar with Acts 20th chapter understand that there's a warning that's being given here. And he says to the elders in this special meeting he had with them, be on guard for yourselves and for all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers, to shepherd the church of God which he purchased with his own blood. I know that I have after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, among your people, among this congregation where you have been allowed the ability to serve. Not sparing the flock, and from among your own selves, men will arise speaking perverse things to draw away the disciples after them. It's important, again, to emphasize this point. The elders in any other congregation here in Bakersfield have no authority over us, nor do we have any authority over any of them. We are not responsible for what they do. We may agree or we may disagree with what they do. But it's their business, and our business is our business. And so we go about trying to be what God wants us to be, following the words of God, doing the best we can, but realizing this is our responsibility in this group. Now, if people do not want to be a part of that, then that's their choice. In the case of these guys that are mentioned here in 1 Corinthians 5, 2 Thessalonians 3, and then the 1 Timothy passages, these are individuals that want to continue to have a relationship with that group. And I guess, I don't think they would say, because I want to hurt the group. But they believe they ought to be able to continue in that behavior and suffer no repercussions for doing it. And it's, I think, interesting. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, let me just get there and read a couple of other passages to remind us that the congregation itself was okay with it. And that's what Paul was so upset about. Verse 1 of 1 Corinthians 5, he says, it's actually reported that there is sexual immorality among you, and such sexual immorality as is not even named among the Gentiles, that a man has his father's wife. Now, how are they acting? And you are puffed up. Now, I suspect they probably thought they were being understanding. I suspect they were probably thinking they were being non-judgmental. You're puffed up and you've not rather mourned that he who has done this deed might be taken away from among you. Paul says, I'm absent in body. I'm not even there. And I know, I understand what needs to be done in this situation. But he is not advising the church in Thessalonica. He's not advising the church in Ephesus. He's telling this to this congregation as an apostle during a time when apostles lived on the earth and had that special authority that they had. So this was kind of going both ways. The church, I think, felt like this was an okay thing. I don't know how they began to think that way, because Paul says even the Gentiles believe it's wrong what it is that you're accepting. So how they got to the point where they thought it was okay, who knows? I really wouldn't really be able to understand that. I'm not that familiar with, you know, how those people culturally would think about this in order to justify it. But whatever, they accepted that it was okay. And so in that particular case, Paul says, it's not right. This person shouldn't be a part of what you're sharing together, because he's not being a part of it. He's determined in his own mind he's going to do what he wants to do. And up to this point, you guys have been okay with it, but that's not right. Now, I can imagine what they might have been going through in the congregation. Oh, you know, what's going to happen if we withdraw from this guy? He wants to be here. You know, he seems to be happy being here with us. You know, if we withdraw from him, he'll go out into the world, and next thing you know, he'll be farther away from the Lord. These are all things that I've heard over the years. If we withdraw from him, you know, his parents are going to be really upset about our doing it. I mean, I can imagine all the kinds of things that might have been said that caused people to say, we shouldn't do anything with this. Let's just back off. Paul said they gotten to the point where they shouldn't be avoiding it any longer. They need to be doing something about it. But this was in their own group. All right, now, what about people who are outside our group? Do we have any responsibility toward those individuals? And I want to suggest to you that for the most part, I don't believe that we do. But if we happen to be personally connected with a situation, it may cause us to have to at least make some sort of judgment or some sort of statement about someone. If someone has been here, this puts us in a very difficult situation from time to time. Someone has been here and really maybe caused a lot of trouble, and they go off to another congregation. We struggle a lot with trying to decide, well, where do we cross the line here? I mean, we can't tell these people, I mean, just because, you know, we withdrew from that individual that, sorry, you know, he can't be accepted into your group, because that's their decision. But it may be that we may decide that we might want to at least let them know about the problem that was here. And I think in most situations, we probably wouldn't even do that. We let that individual, if he wants to be a part of that group, present his case. They decide they want to accept him. That's their decision. We don't have to like it. We don't have to be in favor of it. But it may be that that's what happens. Well, there was a situation that's, I guess, kind of like this in a way. John was not a member of the congregation where Diotrephes was. And we don't know exactly what it was, where the congregation was. But Diotrephes has become a problem for other preachers and teachers who are going into that community. And so, what does John decide to do? Now, I want you to follow along and just try to notice what he decides to do, or how he goes about doing what he's doing. And then I want you to maybe draw some conclusions yourself about, well, what's the difference between that and what Paul told the Corinthians to do, or Paul told Titus to tell the other folks about, or Timothy, if there's any difference there. He says, I wrote something to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to be first among them, does not accept what we say. For this reason, if I come, I will call attention to his deeds, which he does unjustly, accusing us with wicked words. And not satisfied with this, he himself does not receive the brethren either. He forbids those who desire to do so and puts them out of the church. Now, obviously, this guy was a bad guy. And it was making things difficult for guys who were going there to teach. Now, he doesn't give the church there the same advice that Paul gives to the church in Corinth. You know, I've already delivered this guy over to Satan. He doesn't do that. I don't know why, but he doesn't do that. He just simply says, when I come, I'm going to do something. He doesn't instruct them to, you know, separate themselves from this guy. It doesn't mean he was a good guy, but he doesn't tell them to do that. And I guess the conclusion that I might come in that regard is understanding that, you know, if this is a problem, maybe it needs to be discussed, but it's your decision. You guys need to make a decision about whether you're going to allow this or not. And he sort of lays it out to them. But he says, when I come, here's what I'm going to do. What he decides to do here is he says, when I come, I'm going to talk to him. I'm going to discuss this with him. And I'm going to try to convince him that he really needs to stop this. Now, again, John was an apostle, so we might look at this as a circumstance that's a little bit different than maybe others. But nevertheless, we don't read anything about someone here wanting to, at least at this point, to separate themselves from this particular guy. I think we'd have to conclude that at some point, if it didn't change, that something would have to be done. But here's what John does. In verse 11, he says, beloved, do not imitate what is evil. And I think he's talking about Diotrephes here. But what is good? The one who does good is of God, and the one who does evil has not seen God. Demetrius has received a good testimony from everyone and from the truth itself. And we add our testimony now. And you know that our testimony is true. Now, maybe Demetrius had been one of the ones that Diotrephes said, no, we don't want this guy. John says, no, that's not true. He's a good guy. In fact, there's testimony offered that tells us that he's a good guy. And so whatever Diotrephes is saying, you need to at least question it. Now, I think what happens when we consider situations, for instance, when someone decides to leave the local congregation, and this happens from time to time, and the different reasons are given. Sometimes people just move away. Sometimes people are unhappy. There's just all kinds of reasons. Sometimes we just can't seem to resolve what it is that's the problem. Does a person have the ability and the right to do that? Absolutely. Is it possible that they could have been or could have done something wrong leading up to that? Yeah, that's true as well. But that person says, I don't want to be a member of this congregation any longer. In the case of the guys that are mentioned by Paul in his examples that he offers, these guys do want to be members and they are causing trouble. But if a person decides to leave, do they fit that description? It doesn't seem to me to be consistent with the fact that they fit that description. At least that's my conclusion. And there are people who disagree with me about this, so I just want to be honest and forthright with that. But what if we are concerned with that individual or that family? We're concerned for sin that's just obviously in their lives. What are we supposed to do? Now, if they don't want to be a part of the group, that's their choice. They voluntarily came in, they can voluntarily go out. But sometimes people will say, well, what do? You just let people come and go and nothing matters? No, we've never done that here. I'm not saying we're always handling it exactly the way it should be handled. But I will say that if we believe a person or a family is involved in a behavior that is not helpful for them and is not helpful for the cause of Christ, what we will generally do is we will be like John and go to Diotrephes and say, come on, now here's what's going on here, and we'll talk to them about it and try to encourage them to make the change necessary. You know, they may just tell us to get away. You know, you don't know what you're talking about. Or we may write them a letter. A lot of times when we try to communicate with people, it's very difficult to do that. Because if they decide they don't want to be a part of us, generally speaking, they don't want to have any association with us. So sometimes it's very difficult to connect with people in that regard. And also, from the idea that I already pointed out about this guy that Paul says we need to be able to admonish him, this guy and these people in Thessalonians, is that, again, we still want to be able to have some sort of relationship with that individual, hopefully to where we're going to be able, this person who's not bad for us, you know, the people that we're talking about in the description that Paul provides for us in Titus and Thessalonians and Corinthians, these people are bad for the group. The group needs to understand they're destructive people. But even them, he says, you know, don't treat them as enemies. You admonish them. So that relationship doesn't completely break down. And when someone decides, I just don't want to be around us anymore, that's their decision. And I think we have a responsibility as opportunities arise to where if we can connect with them and encourage them to do the right thing, that we should take advantage of those opportunities. Now, I suppose we'll debate about how, you know, you can go about doing that. And I think there is a certain amount of judgment. I wouldn't pretend to try to stand before you and tell you this is exactly how you're supposed to do it. This is exactly how the relationship would work. You and I live individual lives, and I have responsibilities outside of my responsibility to the congregation, just like you do. And if there's somebody living in a way that is reprehensible to God, I certainly don't want to be in a place where I'm condoning or even looking like I'm condoning that they're doing right. Think of this for just a second. What if someone is not, you know, for whatever reason, this, like in the case of Diotrephes, let's say that got to the point where someone said, you know, Diotrephes has got to go. But he's got a lot of power. So you're in that congregation, and Diotrephes is still a member. And nobody's withdrawing from him. Nobody's saying this guy doesn't belong. But you know that there's a problem. What responsibility do you have in that regard? Do you simply say, well, you know, I'll just carry on with Diotrephes just like normal because the church didn't withdraw from him, so I guess that means I don't have any responsibility in the matter. You see, we all individually face situations, whether it's with family or people that we work with, all kinds of these situations where maybe someone decides they don't want to associate with us. Or they're a person that maybe who's done wrong. And we have to decide, how are we going to connect with these people without condoning what they're doing? Because we don't want to encourage people to sin. And generally speaking, I think what I've noticed among us on that particular subject, there are certain differences of opinion about how you go about doing that. And some people would say, well, I just don't feel comfortable even talking to that person. And then someone will say, well, that's not right. You know, don't you think that you have the responsibility to be concerned with their souls? And so then there's the conflict. What you see is you as an individual, you have to decide. It's not the church that decides everything for you. It's not the church that decides everything about how you're supposed to react to people. Because the church may not be doing it right. Big news. I mean, it happens. And if you know somebody who's still in sin, and you know the church hasn't done anything about it, I suspect what would be best for you is to go about your business of trying to teach that person. I don't think it would be the best thing for you to do to spend your time trying to convince the church that this person's a bad person. But if they are, and you know it, you have a responsibility. You're not... Please, I hope you understand this. Churches can be wrong about these kinds of things. They can make mistakes in these areas. Now, we have to do the kinds of things that bring us together, and we have to respect the decisions that we make as a group. I get that. But sometimes poor judgment is made, or maybe, you know, we just have to give further thought about how we're supposed to go about connecting with these kinds of individuals. You are going to be the one who's got to decide that. In most cases, you're not going to have one of the elders standing next to you saying, okay, here's what you should do. You're going to have to decide. And that's what John decided to do in that particular situation. Now, what about other people who aren't a part of this congregation? It does seem to come up. Paul warns in certain situations. He says, I urge you, brethren, keep your eye on those who cause dissensions and hindrances contrary to the teaching which you learned and turned away and turn away from them. So he says, hey, you know, you got to watch out for people. I suppose these are people that could be coming from anywhere. But specifically, I think we would understand it to be in the church in Rome in this case. For such men are slaves, not of our Lord Christ, but of their own appetites, and by their smooth and flattering speech, they deceive the hearts of the unsuspecting. For the report of your obedience has reached to all. Therefore, I'm rejoicing over you. But I want you to be wise in what is good and innocent in what is evil. See, so even Paul's saying is, you know, I want you to be smart about these things. And it's not always cut and dry in these situations. And we do have to use our own judgment from time to time as to how we're going to connect with individuals, particularly when the congregation has withdrawn from them. But in this particular case, I think Paul's just saying there are certain individuals that, you know, you just got to watch out for. Maybe these were individuals who might come and be a part of the church, or in the case of Ephesus, where, you know, people from among you are going to be problematic. He says, I urge you upon my departure for Macedonia, remain on at Ephesus so that you may instruct certain men not to teach strange doctrines, nor to pay attention to myths and endless genealogies, which give rise to mere speculation rather than furthering the administration of God, which is by faith. I mean, what Paul's saying here, if somebody comes along and is teaching this stuff, don't give them the opportunity to teach it. Don't pay attention to these people. So that's just a warning. I think Paul's saying that, yes, when other people come and make associations with you, you need to be careful about it. You need to be watchful. All of us individually need to be that way. Certainly, the elders are given that responsibility, and it's a very serious thing for us to have to face up to. 1 Timothy 4, he says, have nothing to do with these types of people. In pointing out these things to the brethren, you will be a good servant of Christ Jesus, constantly nourished on the words of faith and of the sound doctrine which you have been following, but have nothing to do with worldly fables, only fit for old women. You think if someone came along and said, you know, I'd like to teach some of these fables. What do you think Paul would tell Timothy to do? Don't allow them. Don't allow them. Again, just this whole idea of watching out. One of the examples that's in the outline, I don't have my outline in front of me, so I'll just recall this particular one and that'll be good enough. The question is, well, what do we do in certain situations? One of the situations is that someone decides they don't want to be a member of the congregation. That's their choice. You know, they came in here voluntarily. They can leave voluntarily. And anyway, 3 weeks later, we find out that that person has become an atheist. And, you know, writing letters to the editor, whatever it is, you know, she's out there or he's out there. What responsibility do we have? Well, I would say to you, is that person a member of this congregation? No. So would we withdraw fellowship from someone who wants no desire to have fellowship with us? Doesn't seem to be consistent with what I at least see in the New Testament. On the other hand, do we have a responsibility to that individual? And I would say absolutely yes. we have a responsibility. And if it means like John going to Diotrephes and saying, come on now, we need to talk about that, then that's exactly what we should do. That person has left this congregation. That person is not a problem in this congregation. But that person still has a soul, and that person has a soul that needs to have people who care about that soul. So certainly we as individuals would still have the responsibility, and maybe it is to tell them, you know you're wrong. Please change. That would seem to be the right behavior for a person who's really concerned about souls. So the church has a responsibility. There are people from whom we withdraw ourselves because they're hurting the local church. On the other hand, there are individuals that maybe don't want to associate for whatever reason, and that's their choice. And maybe, you know, people leave all the time under perfectly good terms, and that's fine too. But what about when it's negative? Then, you know, what's the best way to handle it? And it's not always easy to know what is the best way. But we try to do the best we can with, number one, recognizing that individual has a soul, and then secondly, recognizing that whatever I do in this relationship I have with that person, I don't want to be condoning what they're doing when I believe that it is wrong. And I hope that makes sense. I want you to think on the things that I've said this evening. You don't have to agree. You've disagreed with me before, so that's no big shock. But it's a real challenging area, this. And we want to make sure we're doing the best we can to do it God's way. On the other hand, recognize that it's not just up to the church to take care of these matters. And that we all have a deep responsibility with those around us to try to lead them back to the Lord the best we can, if they're willing to listen. Maybe they're not, but if they are, we need to try to do our best, whatever the church may do. Appreciate your listening to me this evening as we sing the song that Jason has led or is about to lead for us. It's our way of saying, be a Christian. I mean, you know, the very fact that we would face up to the responsibility of withdrawing from someone tells us, it's got to tell at least somebody how important we believe this is, this relationship that we all share with Christ. And we want you to share that with us. We want you to be a part of the fellowship here. And if you are baptized into Christ and you want to be a part of the fellowship here, and that's your choice and that's your decision, we'd be thrilled to have you if you want to work with us. If we can assist, please come as we stand and sing.